You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
You know, we've been forced to live like animals for so long. When you are denied access to health care, to education, to culture, to art, to decent housing, clean water, the things that we're denied is just an abomination. It's a sin. It should make everybody rise up. But
People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publishes the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Ordering and contact information will be provided later on in the show. Today's show is packed with material. We have highlights from the League of Revolutionaries for a New America's 5th Convention, a commentary, and we begin with an interview. Our guest today walked the picket lines with her United Auto Worker father while growing up in Flint, Michigan. She was past president of an American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Local, or AFSCME Local of Social Workers. Sheila Garland-Alanaran is currently a member of the National Welfare Rights Union and speaks with PTR correspondent Tony Zaragoza about the status of the working class in America.
So maybe let's start with what is the state of working people today, of the working class today?
Wow, big question. Well, one of the things that my dad was a United Auto Worker. He worked for General Motors, or Generous Motors, as it was once called. That's certainly not the case anymore, in Flint, Michigan. And Flint, Michigan was the birth of a number of things that had a huge impact on the Industrial Revolution in this country. One of those was the production of autos. And to me, the second thing was the emergence and the birth of the United Auto Workers, which is essentially the epicenter in the United States of the labor movement for a number of years. My dad was a refugee from the South. He was from Arkansas, one of the millions of African Americans who moved from the South and came to the industrial North. And he was fortunate in that he was able to actually find a well-paying job within General Motors in the early 1950s. That period in our society meant something really significant. We were just coming out of World War II. There was this whole wonderful period of reform, and we saw the emergence of a solid working class that we come to define as the middle class that had well-paying, secure jobs in this industrial base in our country. What is the state of that working class now? And I go back to Flint, and I think this people will understand this, and some of this will resonate across all national boundaries in terms of state boundaries and state lines in the United States. In 1947, auto production was essentially seasonal work. People were worked for approximately 9 months out of the year. They produced. There was stockpiling going on. But in the summer, they had this thing called the changeover. And during the changeover, pretty much all production stopped and all those workers were let go. They had to sort of fend for themselves while they changed from one model year to the next. Well, the technology was such that that changeover took the 3 months because it was very labor-intensive. Now, that changeover can essentially take place with that production line not stopping down at all. So the technology is very sophisticated. Well, in Michigan in 1947, there was the establishment of what was known as general assistance. And general assistance was a program that allowed these auto workers primarily to continue to provide for themselves minimally so that they would be prepared to come back into the auto factories to take up production after this changeover period. Well, in 1992, that general assistance was eliminated because those people were not needed, because production, like I said, was such that they could do the changeover without the line even closing down. And they did so. And in 1992, you had some 92,000 people in the state of Michigan who were cut off from general assistance because they were no longer needed in the production equation. What does that mean? I'm trying to bring it all back full circle. What does that mean in terms of the state of the working class today? Well, now we have, across the country, technology that allows for the production of great abundance with labor-saving devices, labor-saving technology. That means we now have a mechanism to produce with such abundance, without the same kind of intensive labor, that we don't need these people to work anymore. We have people that are being shoved into, you know, the mech job with the mech pay, mech housing, mech education. I mean, it doesn't really afford you the kind of stable lifestyle that my father's generation had come to depend upon.
Well, one of the things that I think you're pointing to is that more and more workers are being driven into the ranks of this kind of new class of poor. And I'm wondering if you can talk about this problem of growing poverty amidst this once relatively stable working class.
Yeah, well, and I keep trying to root my comments in something kind of concrete. And when I was growing up, Flint was a very vibrant city, and I'm sure people can talk about their own hometowns. It was a city that had premier educational system, premier health care. There was never a time in my life, as long as my father worked for General Motors, that I didn't have access to some pretty good health care. We had some outstanding recreation programs. When you come into Flint today, there's almost like a pall over the whole city. The recreational programs are virtually non-existent. The educational system has essentially collapsed upon itself because, I mean, education has now become a commodity. The public school systems cannot provide the sort of education that they provided on the basis of this high level of production from General Motors and the UA auto workers that were in there. And so the whole base and structure of the economy as it was known under the Industrial Revolution has been essentially ripped from underneath this group of people, and they have no more relationship to work like they had before. They can't rely upon it. It's very unreliable. And so we see in certain pockets, and I'll continue, not just Flint, but across the country, where 80% of the population is dependent upon some form of public assistance, some form of reduced lunch or free lunch programs in order for the students to get their nourishment. I mean, I can go from education to housing to recreation to art to literature to all the things that have an impact on us that's being eroded by this eroding economic base that we had come to rely upon, which we knew as the industrial age. What does that mean? What does that mean for the working class today? I'm going to ask that question. Well, I think what it means is that there's a tremendous amount of insecurity. And we can, I mean, while we say that, oh, I'm a part of the middle class, I'm a part of the, you know, this class of people, but, you know, I'm just having difficulty making my rent payment or making my mortgage payment. But I think what it means more than anything is that we're all sort of being driven to a point where we are looking at each other and saying, you know, my situation, whether I be black, white, or brown, is very similar to the situation of the family across town. So there's this commonality that's beginning to grow, that's sort of rooted in this poverty that we see growing all around us.
Well, many people right now are talking about defeating Bush in November as a key thing in changing some of this. And I'm wondering what you think about that. Is defeating Bush enough these days, or is there something else we need to start preparing for?
Well, yeah, defeating Bush certainly would probably be a good thing in the minds of a lot of people that I encounter, and well, that can't be ignored. Bush represents something very different in our society and in our culture and in our country. And for a lot of people, Bush has brought a very insecure life in terms of being able to have a secure job or know that you can find a job. So getting rid of Bush for a lot of people is an immediate answer to some of their problems. The unfortunate thing, Tony, that kind of concerns me is that if we get rid of Bush, I am not convinced that a person like Kerry or anybody else that's running from either the Republicans or the Democrats is going to resolve what we see being torn apart in the economic base of the economy. So on the one hand, yeah, defeating Bush is going to be real critical, but on the other hand, we still have to go a step further than that.
What are you talking about in terms of going a step further?
Well, we have in this country been so hammered about not identifying with one another. We've gone through the national liberation period and racism where blacks and whites, we were on opposite sides of the fence, and we had essentially nothing in common if we believed what we were taught from the turn of the century all the way through the civil rights movement. Today, it's the whole identification of other people of culture, whether it be Arab American or Palestinian American or, you know, these divisions. So we always have these sort of imposed divisions among the working class that keeps us separate and that keeps us sort of focus on our own little separate issues. all these separate issues are important, but I keep saying towards what end, towards, you know, for what cause. And so I think what faces working people today is looking at what is common between working people or people who are barely holding on or people who may be doing fairly okay, but there's that sense of insecurity. What is it that we hold in common? I think one of the things that we hold in common is that we're all faced with this dilemma. How do we get the necessaries of life in such a way that we can have some sort of pursuit of happiness, enjoying our families, and et cetera? How can we secure ourselves in a very insecure situation? What is it that we hold in common, and what is it that sort of that is preventing us from having that secure life? And I think I think the answer is that it's the private property relationships that are a feature of capitalism. I don't want to get real technical, but I think, you know, if we see companies like Enron, General Motors, et cetera, doing their thing, it has such a negative impact on our communities. These private property relationships are not positive for working people. It may have been 50 or 70 years ago to a certain extent, but for the vast majority of people who live in the United States, and I dare say around the world, these private property relationships are a tremendous fetter. They are holding back the full development of humanity. It creates such an insecure world because it's about wars and taking over markets and dumping the most amount of goods in countries where they don't need it, the commodification of everything from utilities and water to education and recreation. Everything is commodified and put up for sale in this market. And so that means that we live a very insecure life as working people in this country.
You're listening to People's Tribune Radio. Correspondent Tony Zaragoza is interviewing National Welfare Rights Union member Sheila Garland Alanaran about how to hold our government responsible for the well-being of its citizens.
Well, how do we begin to hold the government responsible for the well-being of the people of the country? We have the saying that the government is supposed to be for the people, by the people, and of the people, and it seems like we're moving farther and farther away from that. How do we actually make a government for, by, and of the people?
Well, that is the $100 million question, Tony. You know, I am very much a believer that we all have a voice that has to be utilized in a way that furthers the common good, the good of everybody. I mean, what we need to move toward is that I think as a class, working class people, it is obvious that our rulers, that is Bush and Kerry, I'm just going to put them all in the same bag, and really do not have our interest at heart. They represent the interest of corporate America and the very, very wealthy who own our very lives in terms of the means of production. And they're not giving up much of anything. So that means that we then have something in common because we need to get what we need in order to survive. We're going to be clashing against these ruling class people. Well, what is the first step? Well, I think one of the things is that if I'm struggling about immigrant issues and somebody's struggling about labor issues and somebody's struggling about women's issues and somebody's about education and student issues, that all these things have a common theme. And what is that common theme? Again, we're fighting for the basic necessaries of life, and what is it that's going to make us have a decent life in this country? How do you then begin to join those themes together, those struggles together, so that it's towards something? One of the things that I've seen out there is the Labor Party. The Labor Party is the means to begin to join those various struggles together in a common platform, in a common party that's separate and independent from the Republicans and the Democrats. And that's an easy thing, but it's also a very difficult thing to talk about.
Could you answer one more question for us?
And if I can.
That is, what is your vision for a better kind of society, for a new society?
Okay. I think it's really important for listeners to know that all the things that I've just said to you, I have put into practice for myself. I am a member of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. That organization is a visionary organization that really looks at what is it that we need to do to go from where we are today, sort of spread all over the place, each person fighting their own separate little battles and struggles, and how do we pull ourselves together into a conscious thinking movement that can take us from where we are today to a world that is one based on cooperation, each according to those that have need, as the Bible would say. And I think that that vision is very possible because, as I said earlier, we have the tools, that is the means in production with this wonderful new technology. What's holding us back is the method of distribution. I mean, if we need money in order to buy the necessaries of life and money is almost unavailable because we don't have the jobs that pay well or we can't find the job at all, then that means that there's a huge disconnect for millions and millions of people across this country. So my vision is for a world that is based on cooperation, where the basic necessaries of life are distributed to everyone so that we can then really be about the business of becoming human. You know, we've been forced to live like animals for so long. When you are denied access to health care, to education, to culture, to art, to decent housing, clean water, the things that we're denied is just an abomination. It's a sin. It should make everybody rise up. But we have a right to our planet and to have our planet not only to be a safe place, but to be a place that cradles humanity and that cultivates real human relationships with families and love and all those kinds of connections that I think as human beings that we have a right to have. And that means the elimination of private property. I'm not talking about personal property, your house, your car, your clothes and things like that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the private property relationships having to do with huge mega corporations that own 84% of the land in this country. I mean, so that's ridiculous. We're talking about something sane, something that's cooperative.
You're listening to People's Tribune Radio. We just finished listening to correspondent Tony Zaragoza interview National Welfare Rights member Sheila Garland-O'Loughlin about the current status of working class America. However, we still have a lot more to come. Up next is a commentary read by PTR correspondent Jesu Estrada. The commentary looks at the current people's struggle taking place around the world and how the ruling class attempts to undermine the potential culmination of such struggles.
The peoples of the world are fighting for control of their lives and nations. Some are fighting to end the rule of imperial foreign interests, others to end occupation by a foreign military, and many peoples to establish democracy of, for, and by the people, as opposed to of, for, and by U.S. and European multinational corporations. As our noble struggles are waged, those who benefit from keeping most of the world poor and themselves rich fight dirty. Good people the world over should denounce these dirty tricks and terrorist tactics of the rich. We also must remember that underhanded schemes of the powerful are nothing new. The long-known involvement of the U.S. government in the coup in Chile, September 11, 1973, is quietly acknowledged as classified documents are released. The role the U.S. government played in funding, arming, and defending Saddam Hussein has been loudly denounced by the peace movement and human rights organizations. Ronald Reagan even paraded around the Mujahideen, calling them the moral equivalents of the Founding Fathers. It was the Mujahideen who later emerged as the Taliban and Osama bin Laden and his group Al-Qaeda. Our own officials, who at the same time slashed budgets for the things we need, spent our tax dollars on ruthless dictators such as Pinochet and Hussein, and terrorists such as bin Laden. The same old tricks are used again and again. Here at home, our government, in the service of silencing free speech for the sake of war profits, use the police to monitor and harass peace groups, civil rights groups, and so-called suspicious professors. As our consciousness rises and people take to the streets, the ruling class grows more scared. Meanwhile, the media blackout continues to further silence the peoples here and around the world. They're afraid of us speaking truth to each other. In the Philippines, as the movement for national democracy becomes still stronger and seeks representation in government, progressive groups are coming under fire. According to a statement on Bulatalat.com, chairman of Bayan and Quezon, Peter Tatapido Gonzalez, during his run for the district Ford was shot 9 times on May 12th by 2 men tied to the armed forces of the Philippines. He survived due to the action of his supporters who surrounded him. But many journalists and activists fighting for working and poor people in the Philippines have been killed in recent years. In Dhaka, Bangladesh, on May 26, Anu Muhammad, a well-known activist for economic justice and editor of the online newspaper Megabarta.org, was attacked after a TV appearance. He was advised to keep silent and punched, kicked, and stabbed. Here, in early June, the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign set up a bushfill of poor and homeless families in preparation for the March for Our Lives against the Republican National Convention. They experienced constant harassment from the Jersey City Police Department and Homeland Security, who demolished the bushfill. They're afraid of our organizing. These politically motivated attacks on working and poor people's movements are hypocritical. They come from the lips of those who supposedly champion democracy and are against terrorism. We must condemn such attacks on our civil liberties, attacks on our political rights, the attacks on economic human rights, and attacks on progressive governments and leaders, such as Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. The people fighting for a just and cooperative world must not be hidden or silenced by the ruling class or their many puppets. We must expose their tricks and their fear of us, and not let the rich and powerful stand without being challenged and opposed.
That is the end of our commentary from correspondent Jesu Estrada. Up next on People's Tribune Radio, we have highlights from the League of Revolutionaries for a New America's 5th National Convention, which was held in Chicago, Illinois, May 1st and 2nd, 2004. The event was host to League friends, members, and delegates from across the country. They convened to assess the world and national situations in order to chart future League activities. The event, full of energy and inspiration, is highlighted from the following voices, beginning with the introduction speech conducted by League President General Baker of Detroit, Michigan.
All right, comrades and friends, welcome to Chicago. We gather here today under the theme of Battle Cry for Humanity and a League More Than Ever. This is indeed a historic moment for us. For the first time, revolutionaries are faced with a situation where there is a class that doesn't fit into the capitalist system, not even to be exploited. But this changed social dynamic isn't isolated to just one section of society or a category of people. It has unleashed a spiral of destruction of people, relations in society, and assumptions. Today, every thread in the fabric of American society is tearing or is in danger. Our children, our artistic creations, our elders, our natural environment, our health care, our freedoms of speech and expression, nothing is safe from the crimes committed by this tiny class who have exploited and ruled the country, and imposed their will on the entire world. 11 years ago, when we formed the League, we set out to build an organization for this particular stage of this particular type of revolution. Our purpose of our gathering here this weekend is to update our understanding of what's happening in the world, to adjust what we set out to do, and to organize ourselves for these tasks. We're here for the battle cry for humanity, the League More Than Ever, as we open this convention. Thank you.
I didn't know we were staying at a hospice. What's it called, a hospice? A hospice? Whatever. But I didn't know it. So when I went in my room, it was two guys in the room. 1:30 in the morning. One of them was a white guy sleeping. And I said, damn, I'm in a room with a homeless white guy. The other one was a big black man with tattoos on his arm. And I said, and I'm in here with an indigent black guy from prison. When we woke up in the morning and introduced ourselves, and they said they was with Lerna, and I said I was with Lerna. I said, now if this is not an example, you can't look at an individual and tell if they're a revolutionary or not.
By the way, the program is right on. It's a very revolutionary program. It's written in the language of the people, and it touches on all the matters of society and all the problems going internationally.
When I got here and saw all the different nationalities, all the different colors, everything, it was really a trip. It just tripped me straight out.
As I worked in industry, and as industry left, and as society changed, and as new tasks were before us, I feel like this document and the work that Lerna has done has kind of shown us a way to take that and make it possible today.
It's really important. New class, old class, we are looking at a transition in the way humanity produces things. So we're looking at a transition in the way the ruling class tries to organize its control. And the conclusion, as the last speaker said, we can't fight this thing from every little bit of oppression and try to fight that for some concession and kind of compromise it out and piece it out as in a past period.
The first thing is, we don't intend to put it as a question of categories. We're trying to describe a process going on in society. And that is this process where something new is happening in the economy, and that's changing how people are relating to the capitalist system, where they're thrown out of work or thrown into low-wage work or thrown in, have a job, but they just know it's not secure. It's a new type of process going on. It's not just a question of categories.
You know, if we have a question of what the new class is, it's probably us and everyone we know, because we probably don't know any billionaires. So if we look around and see us all in our diversity and the people we know and work with, that's probably the new class. And we're not just talking about the people that have fallen to the bottom, but we understand that their demands are our demands, because we're not going to get what we need without this transformation that we're fighting for.
If you have the spirit of a revolutionary in you, can I hear you say amen?
Amen.
For some of us, I always say this to my kids, I might not live to see the changes that I strive for, but I do it for the humanity, for the love, compassion. Any preacher, any minister can tell us anything they want to tell us, but people no longer cares of what you know unless they know in their heart that you care.
To me, it just really signifies the height of collectivity of this organization. We know what we're up against. We know the think tanks that exist in the ruling class. We know the resources they have for information. We know everything. We can't rest. We know we can never do that. We have to continue to gather information, to collectivize that, to assess the situation, to move, to assess our activities and so forth, to keep on par.
This crisis that we're facing is a society-wide crisis. It's pulling a lot of different people into motion. Because as people move into motion, they're thinking about their particular situation. They're thinking, well, you know, the doctor's thinking about, well, how am I going to make sure I get more money or a decent lifestyle? And the dot-com person's thinking about how he's going to try to land his next job and all that. But they're not thinking about the person on the bottom. And the beauty about this program is that it takes care of everyone. It starts to instill the sense of community, which our industrialized system has destroyed. It's kind of been this me and my own and everybody else to hell with them.
This is People's Tribune Radio. You were just listening to highlights from the League of Revolutionaries for a New America's 5th Convention held in Chicago, Illinois, May 1st and 2nd, 2004. Many of the voices you heard were referring to League documents. If you would like to view these materials, find our other print and media resources, or maybe check our Speakers Bureau, you may do so by calling our 800 number or visiting our website. The toll-free number is 1-800-691-6888. Again, that's 1-800-691-6888. The website is www.lrna.org. Again, if you would like to view the League programs often referred to in the previous 5th Convention highlights, click on the Documents tab while visiting lrna.org. So concludes another edition of People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook, and on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, thanks for listening, and please join us next time for People's Tribune Radio. Yeah.